You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Monday morning to you on the 8th day of June 2020. Hope you had a good weekend. Right? The 75th anniversary of D-Day celebrated over the weekend as the nation continues to go through tremendous turmoil. And so we'll talk about that today. Good morning to you. So I think I like most people. So where does all of this go? Where does all this go? And so the former Commandant of the Marine Corps, Bob Neller, is going to join us today. We're going to talk about that. So I think that the indignation piece, right? We all got that, and I mean, I think everybody feels it who watches George Floyd be murdered, you know, on videotape. So how do you translate that this time to action? And how do you do that? So General Neller dealt with the Marines United thing. And if those of you that remember that, he sat in front of the Senate Armed Service Committee and took face shot after face shot after face shot from them. And the elements of this are the public grandstanding, right, that, you know, politicians do for their constituents. And then there's the process of reconciling, right, the issue with the truth. And so he'll join us in almost exactly 60 minutes, and we'll talk to him about what advice he has for leaders that are going to attempt to tackle this issue. Because when you look at it, And you don't have to read very long or listen very much to learn the history of it. So when the police decide, so the whole issue of defunding the police. Okay, so in our not too distant national memory is what happened in Baltimore after the Freddie Gray incident. And the police said, if you don't want us to be proactive, then we won't be. And what happened? The murder rate in Baltimore went up. And what part of the city did it go up in? It didn't go up in the white part of the city. It went up in the black part of the city. And so who pays the price when people do shit like this? It's the black community that pays that price. So you don't have to look very far, you know. And the cities that have the highest incidence of police, you know, black male interaction and violence are all run by the Democrats and have been run by Democrats forever. New York City, right? Chicago and Los Angeles, three of the biggest cities in the country, all run by Democratic governors, all run by Democratic mayors, and they have been like that forever. So what is going to make this time different, right? And so when you begin to pull the string on that, the police unions in those states, what politicians do they donate to? Do they donate to the Republicans? No. You know, in Minnesota, who do they donate to heavily? Amy Klobuchar. And Amy Klobuchar failed to indict Officer Chauvin when she was the Attorney General of the state of Minnesota. Now, is there any there? I don't know. So, but to me, you know, when you look at the issue, you got to look at the issue, and you can't be afraid of the truth. And I mean, those are just the facts. Most of the big cities are run by the Democrats. And so they've been in charge of this problem, right? Minneapolis, I mean, I don't even know when the last time they saw a Republican. What, maybe Norm Coleman? So where does the issue go, right? And so when you look at it, and we begin to come to the table to talk about the truth, that's not going to be an easy discussion. Are those discussions held in open, right? Are they videotaped and played for everybody? Are they held closed? Because I'll tell you what, when the police walk in and they throw the numbers out there, and I did this just for the sake of argument. I heard last week about the numbers in 2019. So 10 quote-unquote unarmed black men or women, I think it's 9 men and 1 woman killed. And when you go down that list, I want to say 6 use a vehicle as a weapon to try to kill an officer, right? 3 are in, 3 are in like some kind of hand-to-hand fight with the suspect and fear for their lives and shoot. And then 1 is under indictment and still pending. So I looked at the numbers for 2018. I thought, well, what are the numbers for 2018 say? 17 total in the Washington Post database, 17 total incidents. There should be 16 because in one of the incidents, it was determined that the suspect, who was a habitual felon, drug dealer, shot the round that killed his grandmother. At the time they put in the database, they didn't know. So anyway, it shouldn't be there. So of the 16, right, 11 are either using a vehicle, right, resisting arrest, attempting to grab an officer's weapon, and are straight up, you know, justifiable. Okay, 11 of the 16. 3 are people that have mental health issue, and I would say almost suicide by cop. You know, telling police officers they have a weapon, you know, being told to drop it, and then ultimately pointing and running at officers, you know, and to the point where officers have to act. That's 14. 1 is an accident, right? Suspected police officer grappling, another officer approaching, they spin and bump into him, his weapon discharges and kills a guy. So there's 1 accident And then one is collateral damage, I would say, in that police going to a drug house where they're going to where they're going to try to arrest drug dealers. As they approach, guy goes into his waistband, pulls out a weapon. Officer engages him. One of the rounds goes through him, hits somebody sitting on the couch, and is killed. That person's black. So that's of the 16 incidents, 14 of them are straight up justified. One's an accident, one's collateral damage. And so what's going to happen when the police roll in there and they lay this information out, right? If this thing's on TV, I can tell you what's going to happen. People are going to walk out. I would predict that as sure as I'm sitting here on my ergonomically correct chair here in my studio. So how does this go to a better place? Especially under the stewardship of the Democrats who presided over this issue in this country forever. They preside over the police force in Los Angeles. They preside over the police force in Chicago. They preside over the police force in Baltimore. They preside over the police force in New York City. So how does it go to a better place? How do you find the adults, right? How do you find the adults to get in the room? And I don't have the answer to that, because the single greatest lack in our country today, in my opinion, is no shit leaders. We have a lot of politicians and people that stand up, and I will tell you this: the guy in Minneapolis. I mean, to me, that's what he is. You know, he's an activist who decided to become a politician. Is that guy a leader? Doesn't appear to be one. Not willing to do what it takes during difficult times, right? And I mean, if you see him, you know, I think over the weekend when he says, "I'm not willing to completely defund the police," I mean, the group that he's in, they turn on him. It's brutal. So that's when you say, where does this go? And that's what we'll ask General Neller about relative to his letter. If you didn't see his letter, I think I put it up on, I might just have tweeted it out. It's on, he put his letter up in LinkedIn. So you can do a quick search on, you know, Neller letter to America, and you'll find his letter. And he specifically, you know, talks to white America, black America, racist America, right? To law enforcement people and to leaders, national leaders particularly. So he'll join us here in a little bit. But I'll tell you what, I mean, I don't want to say I'm pessimistic. Yeah, I will say I'm that. I'm cautiously pessimistic that, you know, something meaningful is gonna be done. What makes this different? The video? We'll see. And again, at some point, you know, the nation's got to take a deep breath. And it's got to look at the truth, and there's going to be elements of truth in what everybody who's sitting at that table says. I think everybody all weekend, you saw more and more powerful video, and then you broaden the question out, and I want to play a little audio for you here in a minute. About where does this go, right? And it's not just about the police. It's about everybody. Are you doing what you should do to, you know, to make this better, to make this difference? Now, I had a chance to meet. I was supposed to go to Hawaii. I think most of you know that listen. And I met a woman by the name of Shireen Brown. Her husband is head of Air Force Pacific. And so before the COVID thing hit, I was supposed to go there. I'm so I'll still go there. I think August and July. I'm sorry, August, September. And I want you to hear what he has to say. He's the most senior black Air Force officer in the United States, in the United States military. And he will take over from General Dave Goldfein here in the next, I don't know, whenever they do that, maybe October, this summer, I'm not sure. So here he is talking about what's on his mind. General C.Q. Brown, Jr.
As the commander of Pacific Air Forces, a senior leader in our Air Force, and an African-American, many of you may be wondering what I'm thinking about the current events surrounding the tragic death of George Floyd. Here's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about how full I am with emotion, not just for George Floyd, but the many African-Americans that have suffered the same fate as George Floyd. I'm thinking about protests in my country, tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, the equality expressed in our Declaration of Independence and the Constitution that I've sworn my adult life to support and defend. And thinking about a history of racial issues and my own experiences that didn't always sing of liberty and equality. I'm thinking about living in two worlds, each with their own perspective and views. I'm thinking about my sister and I being the only African Americans in our entire elementary school and trying to fit in. I'm thinking about then going to a high school where roughly half the students were African American and trying to fit in. I'm thinking about my Air Force career, where I was often the only African American in my squadron, or as a senior officer, the only African American in the room. I'm thinking about wearing the same flight suit with the same wings on my chest as my peers, and then being questioned by another military member, "Are you a pilot?" I'm thinking about how I sometimes felt my comments were perceived to represent the African American perspective, when it was just my perspective informed by being African American. I'm thinking about some of the insensitive comments made without awareness by others. I'm thinking about being a captain at the O Club with my squadron and being told by other African Americans that I wasn't black enough since I was spending more time with my squadron than with them. I'm thinking about my mentors and how I rarely had a mentor that looked like me. I'm thinking about the sound advice that has led to my success, and even so, most of my mentors could not relate to my experience as an African American. I'm thinking about the pressure I felt to perform error-free, especially for supervisors I perceive had expected less from me as an African-American. I'm thinking about having to represent by working twice as hard to prove their expectations and perceptions of African-Americans were invalid. I'm thinking about the airmen that have lived through similar experiences and feelings as mine, or who were either consciously or unconsciously unfairly treated. Conversely, I'm thinking about the airmen who don't have a life similar to mine and don't have to navigate through two worlds. I'm thinking about how these airmen view racism, whether they don't see it as a problem since it doesn't happen to them, or whether they're empathetic. I'm thinking about our two sons. Now we had to prepare them to live in two worlds. I'm thinking about the frank and emotional conversations my wife and I have had with them just this past week as we discussed the situations that have led to the protests around our country. Finally, I'm thinking about my historic nomination to be the first African-American to serve as the Air Force Chief of Staff. I'm thinking about the African-Americans that went before me to make this opportunity possible. I'm thinking about the immense expectations that come with this historic nomination, particularly through the lens of current events plaguing our nation. I'm thinking about how I may have fallen short in my career and will likely continue falling short, living up to all those expectations. I'm thinking about how my nomination provides some hope, but also comes with a heavy burden. I can't fix centuries of racism in our country, nor can I fix decades of discrimination that may have impacted members of our Air Force. I'm thinking about how I can make improvements, personally, professionally, and institutionally, so that all airmen, both today and tomorrow, appreciate the value of diversity and can serve in an environment where they can reach their full potential. I think I don't have all the answers on how to create such an environment, whether here in PACAF or across our Air Force. I'm thinking about, without clear-cut answers, I just want to have the wisdom and knowledge to lead during difficult times like these. I want the wisdom and knowledge to lead, participate in, and listen to necessary conversations on racism, diversity, and inclusion. I want the wisdom and knowledge to lead those willing to take committed and sustained action to make our Air Force better. That's what I'm thinking about. I wonder what you're thinking about. I want to hear what you're thinking about and how together we can make a difference.
General C.Q. Brown, head of PAC Air Force, a four-star general headed for the Office of the Chief of Staff, the Office of Chief of Staff of the Air Force. So the strength to lead, right, in difficult times. So we'll talk to General Neller about that. And he's going to have his hands full. I mean, the latest story coming out, I saw it last night. And then today is an Air Force sergeant murdered a sheriff in the along the Central California coast, a little bit south of San Francisco. And he's now been linked, evidently. He's now been linked, evidently, or possibly been linked to the killing of that federal security officer in Oakland. An Air Force active duty. I saw a sergeant. I've also seen the rank of staff sergeant. I mean, unbelievable. So he'll deal with that at some point as well. And then again, different things you see over the weekend. This is audio from one of the lawyers of one of the police officers who was on the job in Minneapolis for less than 4 days. His name is Earl Gray, right? Just like the T, no shit, right? But this is where all this shit's going to collide, right? And what happens when all these officers aren't found guilty of murder in the second degree? So listen to him, what he has to say.
Can you describe your client's state of mind over the past several days?
Not good. What would your state of mind be if you work your rear end off to become a cop, and 4 days on a job you're accused of murder? And he thought what he was doing was right because he asked the training officer, should we roll him over twice? You got to have criminal intent for second-degree murder. And frankly, this is I mean, you've got a case here where my client is in an ambulance, pounding on this guy, trying to revive him. Where's the willful intent? Where's the criminal intent in that? You've got a 20-year cop in the front, and my guy's back there with 4 days. Shall we roll him over? And he says, no, we'll wait for the ambulance twice. And then he says, he's suffering from a delirium? I don't know. I don't know what you're supposed to do as a cop.
So all that will collide at some point here in the future. And the question is, what do we make of it, and where does this go? Right? Where does this go? All right. So on a Monday, and then there's all kinds of other stuff in the news as well. President announces we're pulling troops out of Germany. Germany says, what? I'm not very sympathetic to Germany. We'll talk about that. The Marine Corps, in kind of an interesting statement, and again, the Marine Corps gets out its X-Acto knife and talks about the Confederate battle colors. And so issues a MAR admin, I believe, relative to that. We'll talk about that. So a bunch of stuff in the news. So good morning to you on a Monday that feels like a Monday. The United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. Good morning. We'll be right back. And this is dedicated to the leaders who will tackle this issue. And that's why it's going to be interesting to talk to General Miller about it, because of his experience tackling white-hot issues that are so supercharged that you're not even sure you can have a rational discussion about it. You know, are you interested in the truth, or are you interested in coming here and screaming and creating sound bites to be on the news? And honestly, there's some people that aren't interested in the truth. They have an agenda. That agenda is linked to, you know, whatever their effort is, whatever, however they support themselves, and that's what they're doing, right? And so, you know, don't make the mistake of thinking that everybody that shows up is interested, you know, in the long-term best interest, right, in listening to everybody. Some are not. And I will tell you this, in this day and age of social media, you know, where in order to be heard, you don't have to be part of the group. You just go on social media and start screaming. You don't need the group. You don't need to be a part of it anymore. So this is dedicated to the adults in the room who will tackle these issues around the nation. And good luck to them.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
When the danger is perceptible and the cost of acting are low, the failure to act guarantees that the threat will grow and the ultimate cost will be higher. Every day that goes by makes North Korea a more dangerous country. You don't like their behavior today? What do you think it'll be when they have nuclear weapons that can be delivered to American cities? Do you want to wait till then to act, or do you want to act now?
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You gotta win.
All right, time to check the weather. We'll take a break and then check the news. The currently in Quantico, it is sunny and 75. Down the coast at Camp Lejeune, it is mostly sunny and 81. 29 Palms. This can't be right because it's supposed to be hotter than hell today in California. But it says 64 degrees. No, I don't think that's right. But I just refreshed it, and it says 64 degrees. Go figure. Currently at the Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton, sunny and 66. Camp Smith in Hawaii, sun coming up, cloudy and 71. Okinawa, raining, dark and 75 in Lashkar Gah in the Helmand province of south central Afghanistan. evening, clear and 97. And in Ramadi, late in the afternoon, sunny and 104. Currently in the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of Southern California, it is sunny and 66. Heat advisory in effect. Looking for a high today of 87 degrees. Tomorrow it'll be 89, and then Wednesday 84, Thursday 83. So a warm week here on the Southwest Coast. We'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up. We'll check news headlines, and as you might imagine, there's plenty of it. More of this program coming up next. General Neller in about 34 minutes. Don't touch that dial.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
chairman of the board.
The summer wind came blowing in from across the sea. It lingered there.
You know, I'm watching a pretty interesting documentary, and it's a series. It's about New York City, done by Ken Burns, and I'm enjoying it tremendously. So you might, I think it's on Amazon Prime. You can watch it for free. And pretty interesting about New York City's growth, the problems that it wrestles with, both financial, cultural, and so pretty interesting stuff. Breaking news from the Wall Street Journal. House Democrats propose legislation to overhaul police laws and make it easier to prosecute officers for misconduct in the wake of George Floyd's killing. You know what? I mean, in my opinion, that's eyewash. The problem isn't prosecuting. The problem is convicting. You know, in the reading that I did over the weekend, I found a really interesting series of articles done on an incident where a cop sees a guy on a bike, and he's got no light on the bike, and he's weaving in and out of traffic. So he flips his lights on, and the guy takes off. So the cop follows him, gets out of the vehicle, pursues him, and catches him, and they fight. The guy gets the upper hand, ultimately getting on top of the police officer, gets the police officer's taser, tases the police officer, now has his flashlight, and the police officer thinks the guy's going to bash his head in, so he shoots him and kills him. So this goes to trial, and he's acquitted on all counts, except for a misconduct, right? Misconduct relative to your oath. Yeah, that's the chairman of the board. And that the jury later finds out that that charge was only applicable to if they found him guilty of manslaughter 3 or manslaughter 2, which he had been charged with. And if you don't find him guilty of that, then you can't find him guilty of that. But they found him guilty of the third charge, and he got sentenced to a year in prison. Anyway, but again, it was fascinating stuff to what the jury considered when they went in to deliberate. They said, you know, we took the job very seriously, you know, and they had to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt, right? And did he fear for his life? Was that fear justifiable? And so, you know, to me, these are going to be harder discussions than, you know, ramming through legislation that makes it easier to prosecute. Because it's not the prosecution. You just heard the lawyer for those, and there's two of them, both working as police officers in Minneapolis for less than a week. And Officer Chauvin, former Officer Chauvin, he was their training officer. So he's the guy that's teaching them. And they bring this shit to their attention. And, you know, and I liken it to, I was on the Ranger as a first lieutenant. I left the fleet, went to be the executive officer of the Marine Detachment on the USS Ranger. We're off the coast of San Diego getting aggressed by SEALs that were supposed to come out. Marines are manning all the external guns. So we're tracking, you know, their boats, right? And giving commands, nobody shooting, obviously, because there was no live ammunition. But we're going through that drill because we knew we'd do it, you know, on our Westpac deployment. All of a sudden, so I'm up there. And I don't know. It might have been 2:30, 3:30 in the morning. You know, my Marines say, "Hey, sir, there's a tanker off the starboard side, and it's going the same direction we are." Do they know about it? So I asked the one of the officers of the deck. So there's an officer of the deck, and then there's junior officers of the deck. So on a carrier, I don't know, there might be three of them up there. And so I said, "Hey, are you guys monitoring a tanker off the starboard side at about 3 o'clock? Starboard is right for all you non-nautical people. And he looks at me and goes, yeah, we got it. So the assistant navigator's up there, so I don't know, maybe 30 minutes later, my Marines say, hey, sir, nothing's changed. We're going to cross paths with this thing. And so I say a second time, now, mind you, I'm an infantry officer on the bridge of a United States naval vessel. I don't know shit about how they drive that thing, right? And so I bring it up again. I said, hey, are you sure you're watching that? Are you sure? And he looks at me and goes, hey, man, we got it. And I said, okay. Well, I don't know, 20 minutes later, all of a sudden, the navigator walks out, right? And he says, get the CO from his at-sea cabin, which was right off the bridge. He's woken up. He walks on the bridge, and all of a sudden, you know, he's just barking commands. He says, prepare to sound the collision alarm. Come to course 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, right? Stand by to go, you know, to reverse on the throttle, all the stuff that they say. I can't even remember what he said. I just remember standing there going, holy shit. Now, the following day, we're still at sea, and I get summoned along with my commanding officer to the executive officer of the ship. He's a Navy colonel, 06, captain in the Navy, but colonel in the Marine Corps, right? And he has me at the position of detention, and he looks at me and he says, Lieutenant McNamara, why didn't you bring it to somebody's attention that there was a tanker? You know, now, mind you, we're Marines on the external part of the ship, you know, looking at life, you know, looking for boats, tracking boats. That was our job. They have a bridge team, and they have watches on the exterior of the ship. And so, but I'm about to get my ass wire brushed. You know, so he says to me, what happened? Why didn't you bring, I said, I did, sir. I brought it to their attention on two separate occasions. I got told the first time, they understood it. I got bitched at the second time. Hey, we got it. We know what we're doing. I said, now, sir, if you came to a range and we're shooting small arms or doing grunt shit, you as a surface warfare officer saw something that was you thought was unsafe, and you brought it to my attention. I said, oh no, you know, we got that. This is how it works. What would you say? You'd say, okay. And so to me, you know, how are those novices going to be held to the same standard? So what they're going to, you know, is the jury going to say it was reasonable for them that they should have physically intervened and assaulted their training officer, somebody with 19 years on the police force? Is that what you're telling police trainees, novices, they should do? And from the prosecutor, it's going to come back yes. Is that going to convince the jury? So, again, it's you know, it's to me, it's there's got to be a deeper, you know, this is, okay, we saw over the weekend, we got to get out in front of this, let's propose something and make it look like we're doing. Let me tell you, it's the Democrats who are the problem here, right? If it's systemic racism, who runs all the systems? Who runs the education system? The liberals do. They run the education system all across this country. So to me, the question is, how is this going to be any different if the same people are at the helm of the solution? And I'll tell you, I don't think it will be. I don't think it can be. So, and again, New York run by Democrats, and I'm not a Democrat Republican guy, and I normally don't make these talking points on my, but you know, it's the truth. How do you escape it? California, run by Democrats. Los Angeles, run by a Democratic mayor who's already talking about defunding the police. Right? Bill de Blasio in New York City said the same thing. Haven't heard what the guy in Chicago said, but at some point he'll say it, or she'll say it. I think it's a she. She'll say it too. Chicago. Can you imagine Chicago with less police? Chicago is the, you know, I think it's the murder capital of the country now. What do they do when they have less police? And who the fuck would want to do that job anyway? And now it's going to be easier to prosecute me? Yeah, thanks, but no thanks. Yeah, I don't think anybody in your right mind would do it. First of all, it's too risky. Second of all, now it's easier to prosecute you. I don't need that. So we'll see. But again, it calls for adults. And again, to me, if I was a black American, I would say we've got to look for a different solution. We cannot look to the same people that give us the same bullshit and expect for them to somehow or other do it right this time when they haven't done it. And again, that's going to be Joe Biden's problem. Donald Trump, politically, is on his ass right now. He has got leaders in the Pentagon, right? He's got conservative America, you know, just beating the shit out of him for, you know, his whole idea of, and again, if it's true or not, right, sending 10,000 active duty troops into the city. And supposedly, and you don't know if this is the case, right, but supposedly he and General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, got into a shouting match over it. Although I find that a little bit difficult. But anyway, so you don't know what the truth is, but there was evidently a discussion about it. And you have a, in my opinion, a weak Secretary of Defense who's vacillating, doesn't know his job. And that's why he's in that position, because of a person of greater substance would not take it. So we promoted a guy who's been a lobbyist and a B-team guy. That's a problem. B-teamers do what they're told. And a guy like Donald Trump, that's what he likes. And again, I go back to when he was elected, the great hope was, right, he hires guys like John Kelly, Jim Mattis, right? And it's like, well, he's not afraid to hire strong people, but they don't do the whole dancing chicken thing. Well, Mark Esper does. Mark Esper does. And so, anyway, so how does real change come from this group of people? And to finish my point, Joe Biden, who's been a part of American politics and has a very questionable voting record, he's now going to be the guy who solves it when he hasn't been able to solve it for 50 years? Please. Ridiculous. So if you're looking at these people, right, these people to solve this problem, I struggle with that. And as I told you earlier, you know, the police unions in these states, you know, in terms of money they donate to candidates, it's like 80-20 Democrat to Republican, because the Democrats run the show and they want influence. And so they're in bed with the Democrats in those states. So, anyway, we'll check the news right now. Top story in Stars and Stripes. Black troops call for action to fight racism in military during U.S. Forces Korea Forum. U.S. military leaders have been unusually outspoken about the need to address institutional racism amid a growing wave of civil unrest over the latest killing of a black man in police custody. U.S. Forces Korea had a forum. Consistent calls to end racism. Now, again, we talked about this last week, but, you know, the systemic racism in education run by liberals, you know, show me where we find it. And again, you know, the fact that you personally experience racism at the hands of an idiot, right, doesn't mean it's systemic. So to me, you know, we have to define systemic racism, and then you got to show us where it exists, and we'll crush it. Because I'll tell you what, growing up, you know, I said this last week, but, you know, when you heard the N-word when I was a kid get used as a noun, right? I mean, as a nation, I mean, we're not even close to that. You want to know what systemic racism was when in the 60s and the 50s in this country, in the 70s in this country? Now, It's night and day. And so I don't know, if you're over the age of 55 and you live through that, you look at this and you say, okay, show it to me. And we'll crush it because, you know, in the times that, you know, in my service to the country, we don't see color. It doesn't matter. And I'll tell you what, you know, most of us, we don't give a shit, you know, who you like, who you want to go to bed with. Are you good at your job? Are you professional? Can you do it under sustained pressure when we go overseas? That's what counts. So anyway, that's a top headline in Stars and Stripes. Naval Academy Alumni Board member resigns after accidentally broadcasting racial slurs. This is like unbelievable story. What's the guy's name? Scott Bethman, 63, and his wife Nancy were watching the news. They started discussing Black Lives Matter, making racist comments and using slurs like, including the N-word, in a video that was accidentally streamed on Facebook Live. Unbelievable. So anyway, that in the news. Colin Powell endorses Biden, says Trump is a liar and is a danger to the nation. Colin Powell, former Secretary of State and former Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said Sunday that he would vote for Joe Biden in November because President Donald Trump has drifted away from the Constitution, is a chronic liar, and is dangerous to the country. Next story in Stars and Stripes. Esper's U-turn, a rush to see Trump, a day of tension and surprise. Now, this story is significant. It's an Associated Press story written by Robert Burns, who's a pretty robust writer. Defense Secretary Mark Esper was three blocks from the FBI's Washington field office. He had planned to confer there at a security command center, but plans changed with an unexpected call to divert immediately. Go to the White House. President Donald Trump wanted a briefing from him and General Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, on how the military was handling security as protests grew on the streets of the nation's capital. Esper's driver pulled a U-turn in the middle of the street, flipped on the flashing lights, they rushed to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. It was late on the afternoon of Monday, June 1st, one of the more consequential days of Donald Trump's presidency, when he was forced to reckon with rapidly swelling demonstrations after George Floyd's death at the hands of Minneapolis police officers. This account of Trump's decision-making, based on a senior defense official, as well as several other in the Trump administration, offers insight into how the president was pushing for the fastest, most extreme measures, while advisors at the Pentagon tried to persuade him to take a more moderate approach. The officials asked their names not be used to describe the sensitive deliberations. At an Oval Office meeting on Monday morning, tempers flared. Trump and some of his senior aides wanted more federal troops in the street and fast. Some Washington businesses had been vandalized Sunday night. St. John's Church near the White House had sustained fire damage. Trump was unhappy. Some governors and local authorities in the district were not doing enough to stop the violence, Trump believed. By Monday morning, he was considering a dramatic move, invoking the Insurrection Act so that he could use federal troops to enforce the law. According to a senior defense official, Trump wanted 10,000 federal troops. Esper and Milley, however, argued against calling out active duty forces, fearful that it would militarize a problem that should be handled by civilian law enforcement. Violent elements among the protest crowd, the two men believed, were too small and manageable to justify calling out the military. Attorney General William Barr on Sunday denied Trump asked for 10,000 troops. When asked on Saturday, the White House would neither confirm nor deny the figure. On Sunday, the White House Director of Strategic Communications, Alyssa Farah, said in a tweet that Trump directed a surge of guardsmen, not active duty troops. Senior White House official recalled Trump urging Esper and Milley to get as many troops as needed to secure the city. The president stressed that Sunday night's unrest, in which St. John's was vandalized, sustained, and some businesses were vandalized, had shown the security was inadequate. So I won't go on. And I'm just going to scroll down here. Esper and Milley, joined at one point by Barr, opposed the use of federal troops. To Esper, a failure to get more guard troops called up would mean there would be active duty troops all over the country confronting protesters, a scene he and Milley said saw as unwise and untenable. After Trump finished his remarks in the Rose Garden, he gathered aides and officials, including Esper and Milley, for a walk across Lafayette Park to St. John's Church. The president held up a Bible. Critics would slam Esper and Milley for their presence in the photo op, especially with Milley and his battle fatigues. The scene fed the perception that Milley was giving tangible meaning to Trump's threat to use military force on the city streets, and Esper was allowing himself to be used to advance a political agenda, and which those impressions, right, fueled the letters that you saw written by Allen, Mattis, Mullen, and then comments by Dempsey and others. So we'll ask General Neller if he cares to comment on any of that. Now, this is a story about battle colors. Right. The move announced, so Confederate battle colors, right, banned by the Marine Corps. Well, not really. The move announced in a Marine, because there's a First Amendment in this country, right? And the First Amendment isn't suspended because you're on active duty. The move announced in a MAR admin message last week says commanders, quote, must exercise best judgment and discretion when inspecting workspaces and public areas to find and remove depictions of the stars and bars. However, they're not allowed to inspect barracks rooms or other living quarters, private vehicles, assigned desk drawers, cabinets and lockers, or backpacks. So, so Marine Corps. Trump's troop plan stuns Germany and rocks the post-war order. You know what? Nothing rocks the post-war order more than Germany, you know, deciding not to have a military. Like Chancellor Angela Merkel, the mayor of Grafenwöhr was caught off guard. It's the latest sign of the U.S. deterioration of ties with its ally, Germany, one that not only hosts most of its troops in Europe, but also has seen them fuel the local economy. This medieval town with a tiny population dwarfed by the size of the American military presence shows just what a shadow the U.S. has cast over Europe since World War II. Another troop cut would signal further break with a legacy of two generations. Let me just tell you, if Germany's not living up to its, you know, commitments relative to NATO, relative to its own defense, right? In my opinion, Germany's weakness enables Russia. And at some point, you got to send a message. Send the troops to Poland. Just the News, my favorite website. Historic opportunity awaiting Trump to stabilize Iraq, eventually withdraw troops. Kind of surprised by that headline. All right. A couple of sub-headlines. Man arrested and charged in the murder of a retired St. Louis police captain during the riots. If you haven't seen that, you should take a look at that. New York Times opinion editor James Bennett resigned. In the uproar that followed the publication of an op-ed by Senator Tom Cotton, who said, send in the troops. And then, again, this is the debate that we're going to have. AG Barr, Homeland Security Chief, say systemic racism is not present in U.S. law enforcement. So, in an interesting report that I have to read, according to USNI News, there's a report to Congress on intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance for great power competition. I'm curious how that's going to happen. And when we go to war, what happens? So I've got to read that. So that's in USNI News. Top story in Marine Corps Times is the Stars and Bars story. And then top stories in Early Bird. Number one, National Guard moving out of D.C. as questions remain about how the military handled the George Floyd protests. Yeah, I would say read the entire Robert Burns' article in the Associated Press. Burns, Associated Press. Check him out. He's a solid reporter who gets it right most of the time. Number two, House Armed Service Committee and the Pentagon clash over Esper and Milley testimony. The House Armed Service Committee under Chairman Adam Smith invited the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman to testify relative to the events of last week, and both turned the invitation down. So you haven't seen the end of that. Number three, Marine Corps bars public display of Confederate flags on installations. Mind you, public, right? But you cannot go inspect rooms. You cannot inspect backpacks. You can't go into drawers. So there are conditions with that. Number four, French forces kill Al-Qaeda's North Africa commander, which means nothing, just so you know. We've been killing their leaders for 20 years. Doesn't seem to have any effect. Number five, German lawmakers criticize reported American troop withdrawal plans. Too bad. I've had enough of Germany. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Bob Neller, my former commanding officer, Battle Buddy times one, joins the program on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.